Hey, welcome to another episode of the Sugar Crave Show. I'm excited for today's guest. His name is Marcus Lorenzen. He directed a brand new music video for us for Chess Game, and it came out fantastic. He's just a great, great director. Starting out, he's super, super young, and he just has such a unique eye for film, for life in general. He has multiple films out, a documentary called London Skate Culture, which is amazing. You got to go check that out as well. But in this interview, I really wanted to get that him personally out, not just beyond the being a director, you know, him as an individual. And, you know, just meeting him months ago about this music video, I knew he was going to be great, and I just trusted him so much. It felt very comfortable with him, and I think in this interview, it showcases that. So yeah, we're going straight. It's raw, baby.
Perfect. Let me get the camera going.
Yeah,
man. So yeah, it was exciting, man, for sure. I mean, I'd never done a music video before. I'd edited a couple of videos. I started off editing music to clips on Instagram, and like, I'm a big Liverpool fan, so that's how I really kind of got going in that. And then, so I was always used to kind of sync and enjoying that. And then I just really did film for a while. And then you hit me up to this music video, and I thought I kind of still had the capability to kind of, you know, sync clips with music and kind of have a rhythm and a flow to it, which I think is really important in editing. You know, it's not, I think that's what kind of tells the story the best, the rhythm and the flow. And I think that's what music videos are great for. So yeah, I think that's why it came out really well, because I think it was just kind of very organic in a way like that. I had trained myself to do music videos without even knowing, or editing music videos at least. It took about a day and a half to edit. And then my DP Coco came around and he graded it for 2 days, 2.5 days. And then, yeah, we basically did the credits the other day, and my designer just did the thumbnail, and, we're here tomorrow. It's out.
Crazy.
It's exciting, man.
Yeah. But around this time, this podcast will probably be out by the day of the release. So it's out today. And, man, I just like, it was awesome just seeing the whole, your, just basically the outline. I don't know. I forgot the name of it. What would you call it? Kind of your like your storyboard.
Yeah. Treatment.
Treatment. So yeah, your treatment was like fantastic, man. Cause we can, at least for myself, I can see where you were going to go for, where, like what type of shots, what kind of vibe you wanted to go for, the overall feel of it. And I thought was it fantastic. Just seeing the clips of it, that demo of it, I was just like, holy shit. You know, Marcus definitely pulled through.
It's funny. I thought you didn't like it.
No.
I thought I was like, he's not really on it. I remember I sent it to Joe, and I sent you at the same time. And because I was waiting to like show Joe at the premiere, I was like, fuck it, I'll just show Joe now.
Yeah.
And I sent it, bro, I've watched it 4 times. I fucking love it. This is amazing. Like, oh my God. And I sent it to you, like, yeah, man, I like it. It's yeah, good.
I think it's funny because a lot of people say that about me. Like, I work with artists, and like, for instance, they'll bring back the vocals and I'm like, oh, I dig it. And they're like, well, do you like it? I'm like, yeah, I like it. It's a shitty thing to have sometimes when you work with artists, or like particular people like you, that you like, it's funny because musically I can get emotional. Right. When I'm in person, I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. Even in the session, I'll do that shit. But internally, I'm excited as fuck, dude. It's so weird. I don't know why, but I really did like it. Everything came out like, it was like, what I love about it was a movie. It wasn't like a music video. It was like a movie with music, like scoring in the back. That's what I loved about it.
I guess that it kind of, I haven't shot a crazy amount of stuff, but I've shot specific things. And I guess I've been a quick learner in that regard, even though I'm terrible at like retaining information. I'm just for some reason when I'm on set, I get a knack for it. And I guess, yeah, it kind of all came together. I've edited a couple little short films, but I've only directed my first short film this year in June. And so I guess kind of I learned quickly of how to work with people, how to direct people, because I had only done documentaries before then.
Right.
And that more kind of just run and gun, let's just test our luck, let's see what happens. And this time it was more, yeah, obviously more choreographed. And I thought after shooting that, finishing that short film, I was like, yeah, I'm not working until like September. I'm not going to do anything at the film school. And then Joe popped up, and I remember messaging Joe, I'm going, hey man, like, we should shoot a music video. And he's like, yeah, we should. Let me put you in a group chat right now. I'm like, oh fuck. So, I'm like, you know, like thinking, yeah, it's going to come nothing over. He's like, yeah, we should. And I was like, ah, shit. And then that day, I was around, my friend came around, and I was outside, we were outside having a smoke, and he said to me, you know, what are you up to? And I said, oh man, I think I've got this music video going in. I don't know what I've got myself into. I've never done a music video before. But then I kind of realized, like, you've never done a film before, you've never done a documentary before, so, and it all came out well, so why not just give this one a shot? And then it came together so fucking strangely well, and it's like, it's just one of those things that I've kept seeing as a pattern recently in work, where it just, everything is kind of aligning. It's like every step is generally a helpful, like level up, and it's like adding to something to the next project. The project you're doing right now, whatever you're working on right now, is going to benefit the next project, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've seen that pattern, and it's strange. And it's also strange how just things come together. Like this shoot was very, very weird. It was a very weird shoot.
It seemed like a fast shoot for you, like preparation and kind of getting anything together.
Yeah, it was like, I sum it up as like a blurry, epileptic, psychedelic mess. Really. It's strange, man. Like It's like I was... Like you have days where you think, am I doing the right thing? Is this really the path for me? And then stuff like shoots like these, for example, where they just come together and it's like organic. Like, for example, we didn't have, basically when you brought me on, I had no crew yet and I didn't really know where I was going to find one because I knew everyone was away on holiday. Mm-hmm. Or I had just pissed off and passed projects. And I was like, fuck, okay, I need to gather something together quick. And I had none of the right gear either. Anyway, so I went to Joe's concert, who he was performing like a couple, like a month, or maybe a month, like a half a month before we were gonna shoot. And he said to me, you know, meet Daniela, this girl called Daniela, sure. So I met her and then she said, what are you working on? And I said, I'm doing a music video. I'm looking for, you know, people. It'd be great if you could help me. And she goes, yeah, I know. I have a flatmate who's a director of photography. He's a cinematographer. Okay. Brilliant, yeah, bring him on. And at that time, I had brought this girl on who was going to shoot the video for me, who's going to be the camera operator. So I was kind of like comfortable with like that. It was only me and her so far. And then, she put me in contact with him, and then immediately on text and messaging him, and he said, I'd love to come down, love to help out. And literally the day after he accepted, the girl who was originally going to be in his place dropped out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fucking hell, like imagine like if I didn't even go to that concert and meet that guy, I would have no one. And then anyway, before that, I had shot a music video with a friend of mine. I was like an actor for it. And I met the director, who was the sister of the singer who was her music video. And we were chatting through breaks, and I said, if we ever work on something, I would love to bring you on. And then I thought about this, and I said, hey, would you love to come on as an AD? She said, sure. And then instantly two people, and then I asked Joe, and then one more guy I met at the concert called Manasseh. He said, I just graduated film school. I said, brilliant, want to come on as an AD? He said, sure. So by like, in the space of like two weeks or three weeks, I had a full crew from many different people like around London. And I it was like the first time meeting them, let alone working with them. Yeah. So it just came together so fast and so well. And to be honest, without Coco, man, the music video wouldn't really be what it is, look-wise. He smashed it, and it was literally the first time really actually meeting him was when we were doing the location recce at Joe's house. So it was like, hi, nice to meet you, cool. So how are we shooting this?
Right out of the bat. So no, it seemed like you're puzzling everybody in. So you basically came from just having yourself to now you have a full crew, and now you're like, okay, nice to meet you. Let's get to work. Let's see what's your strengths and what's your weaknesses. What's one thing that you learned the most from shooting this music video?
More organization probably, but also I definitely learned that, more organization for sure. But what I got more from this music video was that was already having the suspicion of just like, sometimes go with the flow, you know, you can prep something so much, but especially in this industry, it's probably going to fuck up, and you have to, you know, quickly in a second fix it, especially on set. So sometimes just go with the flow and hope for the best, and don't, you know, try and be precise as possible, because it's not going to go the way you think it will. And shooting this has just made that philosophy of mine more stronger, that belief more stronger, because it worked out, you know?
Yeah. Especially if you have like a strong structure about it, right? You know, most shoots don't, you know, just as, you know, hearing from my wife, she usually says like, things don't go well most of the time on shoots. It's, you know, it's sometimes planned out, but they, you know, they try to get away from shots, and if it's not working, it's not working. So, but, you know, it seemed like you had your structure, and you adjusted well just by talking to Joseph and just seeing the outcome of it and just seeing how you work with everybody. I think, you know, it's great that you have that leadership, and I think that's what made it the best, is like with you had that leadership of working with other people and being flexible.
Yeah, I guess it was, I mean, watching Kinsey, who was the AD, who was the director I met, who was my first AD on the music video, but she was the director I met on the other music video. Just watching, it was her first time directing, just watching her patience with people. And she told me later on that she didn't really actually know what she was doing. She didn't. But from my standpoint, it seemed like she was just really patient. And so I kind of took that into account and learned from that. And to be honest, no one apart from probably Coco and me really knew what the fuck they were doing, in a sense of like their job roles, because everyone else was kind of either starting out or from Manasseh's standpoint, he was like more of a script writer. He didn't want to be an AD. Mm-hmm. He had to learn on the job immediately. And so did Kinsey immediately. And it was just like pure just determination and like motivation and excitement and just wanting to help. And I think the best thing I took away from this was it was the best testament of human generosity I've probably ever seen in the music in ever in my life. Because we live in probably a world now, especially in the industries we're in, it's always very competitive and don't step on my feet. And, you know,
for sure,
I'll stab you the second I get a chance to, in a sense. But with this, it was just completely different. It was just, I met like 20 extras on the day, and I had to say, hey guys, look, I know you just want to get drunk and smoke and party, but kind of need you to do something. And
kind of need you to work.
The alcohol is not free, you know, fucking put in the work. But like, they were so just happy to, and like, and obviously that's a testament to obviously Joe's good taste in friends probably as well. But it was just amazing, man. And they were just, everyone at any point was happy to just drop what they were doing and help. And they didn't even know me, and they didn't need to owe me anything, and they weren't getting paid. And no one was actually getting paid, but we just all wanted to help. And it proved that sometimes it was just art is still alive, and the appreciation to create art is still alive, and it's not so money driven. I think that was probably the most beautiful thing I learned.
No, that especially in those kind of environments, I think those are the best shoots when people are just starting out. Like, think about it, at least for me as a standpoint, as a music producer, from starting out as being a music producer till when I am now, that drive when I was young to figure out shit and just like, you know, that bonding of other people, meeting other people that were just starting out with me, that was a whole different feeling that is now when I meet somebody that is at the same level and just like, oh, you expect it. But now you're like, oh my God, I don't expect you being so caring and so genuine and stuff like that. So I understand when it comes to like that whole feeling, and I bet it was just fucking amazing, man, just to have people just be on your back, ready to go.
It was like, I think like Coco said to me halfway through the shoot, said, hey man, like, I understand why DPs and directors have these massive fucking egos and like God complexes, because you just order people around. And I was like, yeah, I get what you mean, but I think like that's probably not the right way to direct at all, because the word director can come off as a dictator. You technically are a dictator on set. Mm-hmm. I know that way to probably treat people that you want to work with and that you want to continue working with in the future. It's like if you're under stress and you have to get shit done and you're like, come on, let's go.
For sure.
Hunt with that tone, then don't. But I mean, like, then like that's okay, to a certain extent. But if it's just like kind of more relaxed, you don't need to push people around. Be a bit more chill.
No, definitely, especially in the environment itself. Because come on, do a lot of people like to get yelled at while working? No, most of people don't. Like, some people don't work well with that pressure. So no, man, I think it's best whatever makes you feel comfortable. But honestly, just seeing people that are nicer, they last way longer in the industry than someone that's a dickhead, because what's going to happen, you being that dickhead, they're going to look at you 24/7 to see when you fuck up. And when you fuck up, it's going to be huge. They're going to post it on the wall, be like, yeah, this guy was a dick. Now he's touching, kids. You know what I mean?
You're going in another Harvey situation, man.
Yeah. You're
going to be he's like, I mean, it's just another thing, I guess, I took away as well, and I've probably learned this summer alone, is just, you just be friends with everyone, man. Just be nice to everyone, because you especially in this industry as well, you don't know when you need some help, and when you need a pal and you need some backup.
Well, it's kind of hard to ask for help sometimes, because of your ego. We all have egos, and it's hard to be like, hey, can you do me a solid and help me out with this? I just started learning that like a couple years ago, to being, bold and being like, hey, it's okay to ask people for help, because, the worst thing they do is they say no, right? But the outcome of, they saying yes, it's way more. You know what I mean? That's just like,
collaboration is everything. You can't get anything done without collaboration. As Joe Strummer said, you're nothing without people, man. And it's like the most truthful thing. You really aren't. And I think that was again another example of this shoot. You really are nothing without people. And if I didn't want to, if I was just a snobby prick that was up my own ass and didn't really want to talk to anyone who I thought was below me, I would have never, I wouldn't talk to anyone, and then I would have never met anyone.
Exactly.
Being just me, and I bet nothing would have got done. Because I'm not a camera operator, I'm not a single photographer, I'm a director, I'm an editor. That's my skill set. I need other people to help me in that regard, and they need me to do their thing.
Right.
That's how it works. That's how it flows. Joe's a singer. He's not a producer. You're a producer. You needed a singer. It's collaboration, and that's what gets stuff done. That's the best thing.
It's the key, man. It's the key to your success, key to everything, even with your partner too. You know what I mean? You're working with your partner to make, you know, your guys' relationship work. You got to work with one another to figure out how it's going to work. And just, you know what I mean? No one goes through life by themselves, completely by themselves, right? They have to have a team. And it's just like, it's the crazy factor of that you need somebody. You can be like, oh, I don't need anybody. But in real life, to function, to work, you know, to go anywhere in your life, you have to be with somebody or collab with somebody. You have some.
You can't do it a lot. And you can to a certain extent. And that's why, I mean, you can, but you're going to eventually burn out. You're not going to get the final product that you wanted without someone else's help. And I guess that's what else, like working on the short film and working on this music video, it's like, there's so many jobs where the small people are like treated as small people and they're just disregarded. And they're just, you know, they're not focused upon. And I think that's the shittest way to treat people. And I've been in that situation with shitty 9-to-5s. And with the thing I've learned the most is that like, the little people in the film industry are probably the biggest people you can ever have, because like you need ADs, you need runners, you need the people to get the coffees because you're not going to keep going. You need the people to order the foods. You need all those, like, it's not the directors and the editors and the DPs and you know, the script writers. It's like, yes, those people can make up something great, but they're never going to get as far or complete it without those other people. And those people are as important as the top dogs. And I guess that's why, yeah, you have to treat everyone really with respect, because you wouldn't be getting it done without, you know, like Joe was the musician, but he was running up and down getting coffees, you know, and just like, yeah, you should just be sitting down VIP, you know, in his trailer, not doing fuck all.
Joe is so fucking nice, man. I feel like Joe, I love Joe, but I feel like he's too nice sometimes, and just like, it's like, you know, it's like,
he's like evil. You know, yeah. There's something.
He's got some skeletons in his closet.
Enough time, man. There's something he did in his past. But yeah, he was just running up and I drank like 5 coffees he made. And he's like, "Do you want it iced? Do you want milk?" Like, you know. And then we had another friend called Daniela, who was just purely there to just be an extra, nothing else. And she was happily grabbing the, you know, the light diffuser and just fucking holding a light stand when you needed to. And we had a shot. There's a pull-out shot in the music video before the first drop, mm-hmm. where Freya and Joe are sitting at the table. And we pull it out and we're using a trolley and it's 5 a.m. And we're pulling it out. And we wanted to turn off we had 3 RGB lights, we wanted to turn them all off at the same time and turn the spotlight on. And we couldn't get it done because one of the RGB lights were out of sync with the 2 others. And we flipped one more second than possible, which would disturb the spotlight and the effect. And I had a friend upstairs called Jamal who was sleeping. And I said, so I had to run upstairs. I had to go, "Hey man, hey." He's like, "Hey, whoa. And I was like, "Look, I don't need to be an extra. I just need you to turn on a light. Okay, just need you to flick on a switch." He's like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" I was like, "I just need you to flick on a switch. Don't ask questions. Come downstairs."
Get your ass downstairs.
It was 5 a.m. Imagine getting woken up at 5 a.m. to flick on a switch.
Yeah, I'd be fucking pissed.
Yeah. So he comes downstairs and I grab another guy called Sydney and I think one of other Joe's flatmates. And that seemed to hold the spotlight to turn it on at the same time. And I had basically 4 or 5 people monitoring lights manually to turn them off and then have one person to turn the spotlight on. So it was like we'd pull out and Jamal came downstairs. He was holding on. I said, "Are you guys, you ready? Everyone's positioned." They had their thumbs ready, mm-hmm. holding up, and I said, "Cut, 3, 2, 1 and I said, "Off." And then 4 of the people turned it off. Nassim turned the spotlight on and we got the shot. And all while that was happening, my second AD Manasseh was just down on the left side of the floor, holding this literally lying down, holding this dodgy like lamp that was gonna lying there for solid 30 minutes. And he was like, "Guys, I think we should wrap it up." I'm like, "No, we gotta do another one." Right. Like Stanley Kubrick, like, "We gotta do another one." But it was just like it was just such a team effort, man. And like those memories are just great. And I think when you have big budget films, you kind of lose that fun of it, because everything's done for you. You have the equipment to get it done. You're not bringing a trolley from Marks and Spencer's at like 4 a.m. to get a pull-out shot. You know, you're going to use a slider on a professional film. You know, that it was just, it was beautiful. It was a lot of fun, man.
You guys did an awesome fucking job, man. Honestly, like, we would have to, once I get over there, we're all going to have to go to dinner together, because I just can't thank you guys enough for how much, at least for you, just how much effort you put into the work and how dedicated you were, and just very, you know, consistent. Just like, it blew my mind, you know, ever since I was looking up your stuff, and I was just like, man, like, I can imagine how this is going to outcome. Cause I was a big fan just from the London state, you know, skate culture video. I was like blown away by how that was produced and all that. That was amazing. Can you talk a little bit about that and like how that started, or what was your idea when you first created that?
Yeah, I don't know. I was, I feel like I've spoken about this so many times, cause I'm really, really fucking proud of the project. But yeah, we shot it in December 2020, and it was a school project. At the time, I was working for this freelance media company, so I really wasn't paying attention to the school thing. And we were quite like, it was like the week before we had to like think of our idea. I was studying creative media for a while. It was like kind of my equivalent of my A levels. Which is like SATs in America. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a week before we had to like hand like our idea and treatment in. And we're sitting around, and my friend like started dressing up kind of like as a TikTok skater boy. So I was like poking fun at him. And I have curtains and he has curtains. So we're kind of taking the piss out of ourselves. And then we kind of like, we went on to the kind of idea of, it's really interesting how skateboarding has evolved now. And it's becoming this really, I mean, it's always being cool and it's always been a trend, but it's really got very more mainstream and I guess publicized, and the kind of the stereotypes of skaters being, you know, seen as like stoners and lazy and dropouts and you know, just idiots. I thought that was like very interesting how you had a ton of so-called social rejects in like a, you know, a kind of a big circle skate park, right? Metaphorical circle skate park. And they're labeled lazy. And I was like, okay, well, I want to kind of go out and see the skater behind the board. You know, I wanted to really see that, because I didn't know much about skating. I live in Notting Hill, but like, and there's a skate park down the road and I see a ton of skaters and I'm surrounded by that. But I never really paid attention to it. I was always also a bit intimidated when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of thought I wasn't cool enough, or I didn't really want to go down and because I think skate parks are also seen as like really intimidating and like very rough and like dirty and like rebellious and like punk. And it is. But what you find is, and I think that's what we really done really well in the documentary, and I'm really proud of how we approached that, was we showed this other side, this side that's not really, I guess, known, or maybe not known, but like seen as much. And we wanted to break the stereotype. And what you see in the documentary is just like, everyone is so fucking nice and everyone is so lovely and kind.
Oh, it's a great, after I watched that, I was just like, your whole stereotypes of skaters, it's gone. It honestly seemed like a whole family of like,
is, and that's the thing. It's such a family, man. And what you see in the documentary is really what we experienced as well, because we went down there, we had nothing planned. It's quite magical in that sense, because we had nothing planned. Again, it was like such a wing it. I did not really care if this was going to fail or succeed. I was kind of doing it, just get hit a tick. And then literally over time, I think after our first skate park, which was in North Acton, close to our college, we went down there and literally approached like four or five skaters, and they were like, yeah, sure, let's do it. You know, let's shoot. And so we mic'd them up, put the camera on a tripod and shot. And what you literally get in the documentary was just that. It was nothing was rehearsed. Nothing was like, can you approach it like this? Nothing was like edited to seem like there was a certain narrative. It was just what the answers are given in the documentary is amazing. And I think Billy Harnett, who's one of the skaters we interviewed at South Bank, who's like what's quite like a pop culture big skate park in London. His ending quote, well, it wasn't his ending quote, but I made it his ending quote. It's just fucking amazing. And I think it goes like, skateboarders are labeled as lazy and stoners and idiots, but really, I love skating on a plank of wood with four wheels. That's my passion. And I think that really just sums it all up, that quote in itself sums it up. And I've gotten messages and people commented and said like, I was always so intimidated at skate parks. And after seeing this, I'm really like excited by it now. Like I want to go, I see it as a family. And it was a learning experience for me. It was a learning experience for my friend who was really into skating as well. He was my second camera operator. And he was a bit scared to go skating as well. And then after that, he eventually got into skating and so it was just such an organic thing, man. And like every skate park we went to and every interview we got was just like on the spot. We could have gone to every skate park and no one would have been there. And everyone would have been just a dick and that would have been fine because like, who are you? I don't want to be on camera. Where's this going? I understand that. But they weren't. And we met a guy called Michael, who's like kind of, I wanted him to be that center skater of the documentary. And he's a lovely guy, lovely dude. And he called up a couple of skaters and arranged for us to go to another skate park and interview them. And like, so like he became a producer in a sense, like after a while, like it's like, it was just such an organic thing, man. And it went from something that was just like, let's just get this done to, it's probably one of my best pieces of work. And I'm really happy it's on my portfolio because I'm just so proud of it.
Yeah, man. It's fantastic, dude. Just that, what I like the most about it, it's so raw, right? Mm. It's so true. And you guys are not determining what the skaters are saying, right? You're just kind of like, hey, you ask them a question. It was like, it's like a very true documentary of like what London skate, Cause that might be the same perception maybe in the West Coast, who knows? But overall I see like there's somebody behind that skate board, yeah. Right? There's something deeper beyond that. And you guys did a fantastic job of kind of this showing that there is character behind that. These guys are not bad. Like what was so cool about one of them, he was talking about trying to hit, if he didn't make a move, there'll be six other skaters trying to teach him how to make that move. And I was just like, to me, that reminded me of when I started, in Full Sail back in university when we were doing recording arts. If you didn't know how to do it, you all would get together and just like, figure out how to make that sound or how to fix that audio and stuff like that. And it was just that whole family of it, that bondness of like, we are going to do this together is like, I think it was amazing. I did not expect that in the skate world.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And also what I'm really proud of, we showed that if you think skaters are lazy, then you're absolutely like naive as fuck because they're probably some of the hardworking people, if not the most hardworking people I've ever seen. And as Max said, one of the other skaters, he was like, if you fall down, you just have to get back up because there's no like, you can't troubleshoot that shit. You can't fix that. The only way you're going to get better at skating is if you get back up and go again. And you can like put that as a metaphor into so many, into life completely.
Right.
That could be a complete ideology for life.
But I would think I know why these guys smoke weed. Cause imagine falling.
Yeah, no.
10 feet.
Well, like most of them are kind of stoned when they're skating. Cause they have to like, just, it's not because they just want to like get high. It's because they just have to like numb the pain. But the thing is this, again, it's like, I can't even say that. When I smoke up, I'm like, I don't talk to me. I don't want to work. I don't want to kill me. They're like, I'm on it. It's like it motivates them even more. It's like they've just like taken cocaine. It's like they're just done. They're ready. I'm like,
they're pumped, man.
Amazing, man. And oh yeah, oh man, it'd be so cool. Like if you know, if I did do anything in the film industry and I got a name for myself, I would love to, like, in like 20, 35 years, if I had like an exhibition, I'd love to get all the guys back together and like just like kind of do a reunion of that documentary. Because I love that documentary so much. I love everyone in it. And we don't really talk to the guys anymore. Mm-hmm. We all follow each other. We all see what they're up to. One of the guys does music now, but still skating. And they're all just still skating, and it's lovely, man. Lovely guys, and it's just, it still blows my mind how, like, we didn't know them, we didn't plan that, we just met them all on the spot, and it's like the best guys you could have ever met. You know, it's like the best scenario you could have ever had.
Right.
And that was insane, I think. And there's a shot in that, in it's the beginning shot. But it was one of the shots I shot at the end of the day when we were at South Bank. My friend was like, come on, I want to go home, let's go. I was like, hey, one more time, I just want to get this last shot. Mm-hmm. And it was like a skateboard plopped up against the wall. And I wanted to focus pull it from the skateboard to the background. And it was just going to be that purely. And I kept fucking it up and I couldn't really get it. And I was like there for a minute. And this guy was like waiting to get a skateboard back. And I was like, no, just wait. Just like, leave it there. So I get the shot and he's like, okay, cool. So like I'm just pulling it, focus pulling it, keep fucking up, and then I finally get it. And the second I pull focus from the skateboard to the background, this kid walks into the frame and he picks up his skateboard. And I go, fantastic. And I didn't clock it in the moment. And then when I was looking back at the rushes and when I was editing, I was like, wow. Like that is just, there is so much symbolism in that. You know, that whole like the skater behind the board, and it's like a frame inside of a frame kind of shot, you know, he's like, and it's perfect. Like he is in frame of not just my camera, but in the skateboard itself, oh, wow. Silhouette of the skateboard. And it's just like that. And that was not planned again. So it's just, it really sums it up. And you have an experience like that. You shoot something like that and in the art, and you probably felt a lot of doubt, you know, in the past, like, am I doing the right thing? Is music, should I really keep pursuing this? It's like, it's uncertain, it's rough. And, you know, everyone feels that. But once you complete a project like that and it goes so well and it wasn't planned and it's just like, it's just smooth. You think, maybe someone is looking over me. Maybe this is meant to be. Maybe this
right.
is meant
to be. Do you sometimes get all spiritual about it? You're kind of like,
Kind of, in a sense. Yeah, I mean, I'm not religious, but I do kind of believe in manifestation. I don't want to sound like an LA bitch right now.
I feel that there's a third body inside me.
I do, in a sense. And when you have moments like that, you think, wow, yeah, okay. Because not everyone is like, you know, most of the time, 99% of the time, it's going to flop if you don't plan it. And then you have the mute, and then everything else I've made after that. There's been ups and downs, of course, and there were ups and downs in that skate locker as well. Mm-hmm. But each time something just does go well, I'm like, yeah, that's just another, like, something is, you know, this, it's something's meant to be here, I think. And the music video, again, is just another project that highlights that. You know, it's like I had no crew, and then in the space of a week and a half, I had a crew, and they were, again, once again, like some of the best people I could have asked for. And I want to work with Coco again. We're already planning another music video shoot soon.
But that's the thing, man. You got to keep going. That's the thing. A lot of people would stop and be hesitant to go to the skate park. Imagine if you were so scared that you had that perception of skaters. You're like, I've always wanted to skate. You know, film a skate, you know, go have that visionary of beyond the skateboard, right? But if you're too fucking scared, you know, that would never happen. And that's the thing, is a lot of people, at least, you know, in your status or your position, they'd be scared. They'd be like, man, you know what? Fuck it, I'm not gonna do it. I'll just do a simple documentary in a library, you know, not to trash the library, but you did. You had the balls to be like, you know what? Fuck it. You know, I'm gonna do it. And I'm just going to shoot it. So it's like, you know, I just say, man, just fucking keep going. Cause I looked at the other shit that, like, the other one I was looking at, it was the complications of infatuation, which I really thought it was a really, really cool, kind of like dramedy. Right. And, it was just really just interesting of like, piecing everything together. My favorite part was the shower scene when she's like, how long have you been showering, like cold showers? She's like, I don't know. And then you pan it to him and he's just like, no motion. He's just like a serial killer looking guy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, that film annoys me. I mean, I'm really proud of it and I love everyone in it.
Yeah.
But I think it does have something going for it, but it's, I mean, for a first short, it's great. I'm really happy with it. But
what annoyed you the most about it? Just like how everything was.
I think with my first time writing, and I co-wrote it with a friend of mine, and what we wanted to do is really demonstrate like this main character, which is, I think, is the third character in everyone's in any relationship, which is silence. So we wanted to demonstrate that, and I don't know. I think. You obviously need like ultimate sound design experts on if you want to achieve something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did to a certain extent, but I think it's missing two solid like dialogue heavy scenes. Like you have like scene 11, which is when they're in the bedroom talking about the stir fry and how Simon dies. You know, spoiler, but you know you're probably not going to watch it anyway. But,
please go watch it, guys. He's just being very humble. No, it's a fantastic.
There was real dialogue in it and you see that them acting really well, but everything else is a bit more just like mundane, and I understand what we're trying to do there, but it felt like it was losing if it had two real depthful scenes, like mm-hmm. real something like that, then it would be great. I mean, my friend summed it up after he watched it. He said a lot of complications and not much infatuation. I think that sums it up quite well.
But again,
I'm proud of it. I love how it looks. It's really well shot, and I really like. It's a pretty film in that sense. But the writing, I'm kind of annoyed by. But again, it's gonna. If it was perfect, then you know I would stop there.
You're gonna have that with every project, man. Honestly, even the big people, they release, you know, a film, and they, you know. Let's say give a big director, you know, Steven Spielberg, you know, they'll still trash his shit. You know what I mean? Regardless of Steven Spielberg, you know what I mean? It's just not everything's a gem, but if you just try it, you go for it, you know, you risk everything for it. At the end of the day, you're making art, and art's so subjective. You know what I mean?
There is some quite arty scenes. I mean, I recently found out it won best film at my college. And I didn't even know. And they wrote an article on it and they liked it a lot. And I was like they're trying to use it as like kind of like the marketing for new students. And I was like, oh, like I was really honored by that. And I was like, mm-hmm. That's very, but I wish it could have been something that I thought was the best. Cause again, it comes from like, if people love it, then I'm really happy. But
right.
If I don't, I'm not happy with it. But I think one thing it does do really well is it shows where the director's mind is, where my mind is at, what I want to try and do, what I want to try and make. And I think for that, then that's what like everyone's first short film should really do. It should always try to portray the direction you want to go in, what you really want to make, and the new style you want to bring. If you look at like Edgar Wright's early stuff, then you know, you obviously see the like how we went from that to like Baby Driver and Sean and the new film that's coming out called Late Night in Soho or Last Night in Soho, something like that. With his quick transitions and his like comedic direction, and you can see what he's doing in his early stuff. And I think you can see that with this work and Skate Doco too and music video. But yeah, I don't know. I'm happy with it, but I'm not in a sense.
No, I feel you. I get that with songs too. Like even I'll even say Chess Game. Chess Game, I was really happy how it turned out, right? But I was like, man, it needs something else. And I think that's just an artist in general. You feel like your work is never perfect and it will never be. And that's the thing, it's like hard to accept that it will never become perfect in anybody's eyes.
Yeah, I mean it's what Hans Zimmer said. He said like, you know, what keeps me waking, and this guy's like a multi-millionaire, he's established, he's everything, he's Hans Zimmer, man. But he says, you know, I don't think I've ever made a perfect piece. And And that's what keeps me waking up in the morning. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's complete, that's facts. You know, that's why it's the same for me. It's probably the same for you. And, but again, like, I think every masterpiece should have some flaws in it. There should always be, like the Beatles, when they made A Day in the Life, Paul walked into the studio and the producer said, hey, Paul, do you not want to go again? Like, you know, Paul was happy with it. Like, you know, don't you want to go again? Like, there's, you know, I can hear two mistakes in there. He goes, two? There's three. Yeah, let's leave it. That's fine. You know, I like that a lot. I like that story a lot, because first, the guy didn't clock there was three mistakes, and then also he's happy with the mistakes. And there should always be some sort of a flaw to whatever you're working on, because it's not realistic in that sense. If it is a perfect piece, if art is not perfect, if it is a perfect piece, then technically it's not, in a sense, relatable, which I think art should right. be in a certain extent, because it should make you evoke emotion. You know, if you're watching a film, you just feel like an alien towards what the film's narrative is, and you're not going to feel any emotion. So there should be mistakes to it, in a sense, if that makes sense. I don't know.
I think so. The imperfections make it a character itself. You know, like, I think they were talking about, actually, there's another Beatles, I forgot which track it was, but it was the janitor was knocking on one of the studio doors, and they got in on the recording, and they're like, oh shit, we got the janitor on the recording. And they're like, no, leave it. This is fantastic. It's awesome. And it's just, there's so many stories of that, even in film, there's so many stories of that perfect, like with that skater guy. The guy picked up this board, but it was like, it was an accidental, almost like an accidental perfection, right? Like, it happened accidentally, but it turned out really well. So it's like that, you know, those things, I feel like those things give me chills. I'm just like, oh my God, we got it.
So it's like the subconscious is kind of more powerful than consciousness. It's like something that's already been planned that you didn't know of, you know. Again, like kind of Carl Jung-esque kind of vibe, like... Like, you know, the subconscious is, you know, yeah, I actually did plan for you to pull focus on that moment. So, you know, it's just like, there's like, I don't know where to describe those kind of things, but they are great. And sometimes you have to think, is someone behind me? Is someone looking over me? You know, this is weird.
Right. It's like goosebumps and kind of like,
you know, I'll take credit for it, but I didn't mean to do that. And I think that's kind of cool. And I like that a lot. And I think that comes with art, man. It's like, I think when you do try to make it too perfect, it's going to fuck up.
You know? For sure. And it has to. It kind of has to. You know what I mean? There's no... The world is not perfect. So why do you think you're going to have a perfect time? You know, there's always like a great experience, right? That everything plans out, but not everything plans out perfectly. It's like it worked out at timings and stuff. There might be a little bit something that fucked up, but... It, you know, it looked good. It still turned out well. So it's like, technically.
There was a fuck up actually in the music. But I think it looks great. And my DP hates it. But I was like, I think it looks great. And it's when Joe comes in. It's the second shot. Joe comes in to the party, notices the girl, and we whip pan to her. I love it. I think it looks so smooth.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
And she's in focus and everything, because Coco was like very precise about that. And he's like, nah, I hate it. And I was like, nah, it works. He's like, no, but it's not good. It's not perfect. And I was like, man, like, it's not meant to be. Like, like to a certain extent, you have to, there is a, like, I can have toned it into, like, some kind of symbolism, which I always do. I'm like, actually, technically, I like how it is handheld and a bit, you know, broken and rugged, because that's how Joe feels, because he's starstruck by this girl. So the camera, you know, translates that, you know. I don't know, but that's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think when I first started editing, I was so perfectionistic, and like everything had to be perfect, and like, you know, I was doing stuff, I was correcting stuff that no one was gonna see or hear.
Yeah,
you know, never. I was only gonna do it, and then after a while, when I put it out a week later, I wouldn't care. I would be on to the next thing. And now I think after doing all of that, I've got to the point now where I'm like, I'm a bit more laid back. I'm a bit more like, okay, if I'm really happy with that and it is solid and there is like actually like no proper mistakes, but there is like a few little things that are just kind of sometimes out of your control, it's okay. You know, it's just like, it's life, you know, just relax.
Just don't overthink shit. That's the thing. You when you're in the mode, you sometimes overthink stuff, and that's when you start fucking up worse.
When you listen to something or you watch something multiple times, you're just gonna start to hate it. You have to understand that, like, maybe taking a step back and waiting a little while and not looking at that or listening to it for a while, and having and then bringing a fresh pair of ears and eyes to it, is actually going to benefit it more than just staying with it and trying to fix that problem.
Have you ever been too emotionally invested into a project?
I mean, I think every project's like that, man. I'm always emotionally invested into it. But, yeah, I think every project is make or break for me, I think.
I guess if it's like, I mean, more like in the dark side, like you're like, like, I've been, like, there's been projects that, you know, some songs I made, it remind me of somebody that I miss. And I've gone to, like, you know, dark thoughts of my head. I'm just like, geez.
Well, not to that extent where, like, it's sparked a memory and I'm going, I've caught some impression. I guess for me, in the sense of, like, I'm so emotionally invested in a project that when it's done, I'm happy for 2 days, and then I go down this, like, I have this, like, massive calm down, and I'm, like, quite, like, just exhausted and a bit unhappy that I have now nothing else to focus on. And that's why, like, I'm like a 4-day kind of guy. So, like, after 4 days, I'm like, I need to do the next thing. I love doing nothing, but I love doing something at the same time. And when I'm lazy for like 4 or 5 days doing nothing and not thinking about or working on anything with no deadline to hit, I just become very itchy and I need to start doing something because I start judging myself. My alter ego is like, man, you're fucking up. You're failing. You're not doing something. You need to get on it now. Do something. And I guess that's like after I like, because I didn't think that I wasn't going to touch the music video for like a week. I was like exhausted. And I was like, yeah, I'm not touching that. I'm not going to edit it for a week. I've stayed up like back to back to 7 a.m. shooting this from Saturday to Monday morning, not touching. And then for some reason that night, I had like a bath and getting back from Joe's, I got out and I just kind of recouped myself. And I went for a walk and I felt quite sad for some reason. I guess I was also really exhausted, but I just felt quite emotionally drained. And I was walking and then I was listening to, I love Tame Impala. So I was listening to Tame Impala and.
Yeah, they could get you in the dark, get you in the dark.
I was like, I need to edit this tomorrow. And it took a day and a half to edit. And that's very rare for me in the sense, like I procrastinate a lot, but I also get it done, but I do procrastinate. And I feel I'm more perfectionistic with a project. Well, the Skate Docker for me, took about a week and a half because I just wanted to perfect it. I wanted it to be so perfect. That's like that's the last kind of like real, like everything has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to look at this and watch it in 2 weeks time knowing it's out. People also watch it and I've spotted a mistake that I could have avoided. I don't want to do that. And I was like, I was so focused on that. And since then I've been a bit more kind of calm. And then after I finished the music video, did that in a day off, I was like, what do I do now? You know, I was like, damn, that was really fast. And then we graded it and I was like, cool, now what do I do now? And then I did like nothing for 3 or 4 days, and then I met a friend of mine's girlfriend who wants to shoot a music video, and now I'm just listening on that. I just want to do that now, and I've got the treatment done for that, and I'm in a meeting with her tomorrow, and I'm on to the next thing. I just want to do it. And for some reason I've just found a lot of motivation after doing this music video. Usually after a project I don't want to touch it, like I feel a bit more I feel validated to just be lazy.
Right.
Now, more than ever, I'm like, I want to, let's get something going now. Let's like, this could be something. I'm actually quite happy to do music videos for a while now because I really like the format to it and I really like the formula to it. I think I'm okay at it. And I have a guy with me who is very good. And I think we could, I'm quite excited about the direction we could take this in.
You have to, man. You have to keep going because it just was it was just fantastic. Just hearing from everybody else talking about how you worked, it was just like, man, this, you know, and just seeing your other works, it was just like, you know, you have that ability to form a really good project from, you know, whether it's, you know, dramedy to a serious documentary to a music video, you have that talent to construct everything. And you just gotta, I just can't wait for your other music videos and just your other work. I'm just a big fan, Marcus. And man, I'm just thankful. Yeah, just thankful to have you as part of the team and just as a friend in general, because I can see that not only you have passion for your film, but you have passion just for music, culture, and it's just, you know, we just need more people like that, just to be, you know, they love everything, and they, not that they have to love everything, but they acknowledge everything, and they, you kind of respect everything, just like, oh, that's that culture, and you're interested about stuff, and that's even out of your realm, but you want to make the light of that, show other people that this is there, and you've never discovered it or just acknowledge it, but it's there, and here's a piece of that. So I'm thankful that you took the time off to join this podcast. So